All right, Guillermo Romance here for the October 25th Without a Roof radio program, the Pledge Drive edition. Phone lines are open right now, 895-0131. And it's my real pleasure. My main guest for today is Laura Kutsuna, the executive director of the Jesus Center here in Chico, California. Welcome to KZFR, Laura Kutsuna.
Thank you, Bill. It's great to be here again.
It's good to have you. You know, I know there was some stuff in the ER, and I think there might have even been a little snippet in the Chico News and Review about your short- and long-term vision for the Jesus Center and how that ties into some possible property that the city's offering up. So what's your short-term, long-term vision in this property, this this property down there, the BMX track?
Yeah. So it's actually my birthday this week. Happy I've been birthday. In the job 2 months. 2 months.
2 years.
Take two. I've been in the job 2 years. Yeah. And so it's exciting because more than a year and a half ago, I realized the limitations that we had at the 1297 Park Avenue location. And so I began to think, where could we go and what could we be if we weren't confined by the space that we currently inhabit? Mm-hmm. And so that's really been my heart and my mind and my focus. And as I listen to the other service providers in the community, it is obvious that not only do we have some room for growth as the Jesus Center, but we as a community have services that we need to continue to add to make our services more complete.
Maybe delve in a little bit. Why does the Jesus Center feel compelled to move?
Yeah, well, it's just a bit of a misfit. I think when we first moved into that space, we were serving, I'm guessing, far fewer human beings. And right now we are maxed out on the space. And we don't have enough services indoors, so people are forced outdoors, and we're in a residential neighborhood, and there's no safe, allowable place for folks to hang out if they're not in the building. We spend lots and lots of money, lots and lots of time, lots and lots of energy just mitigating that impact versus helping the people that were there to help. So it's just been a continued misfit. So we've been looking hither and yon all over the city. And so when Mark Orme came to us this summer, he had no idea that we were already looking. He came with this idea and he asked me very simply, "Are you willing to relocate?" And I said, "I'm not only willing, I'm ready and I can't wait to relocate. What do you got up your sleeve?" And when he identified this location, I didn't even know it was there. And it makes great sense given its proximity, particularly to the tourist shelter. Because right now, anyone who's being served by the tourist shelter has to schlep across town to come for meals and get other services with us. And so already a huge portion of the people that we serve are being inconvenienced by the fact that we're located where we are. So that's an early win that makes locating there really, really a great place.
You know, I found one of the strengths. I'm going to ask you in a second, one of the strengths. What are the strengths of the current Park Ave location? But I thought it was a strength of the location because it was so close to the downtown center and people felt, you know, more connected, not, you know, put out of sight, out of mind.
Yeah.
What do you see for some strengths for
location? I think it is centrally located, not only to the downtown, but it's kind of in the middle of town, if you will. So the fact is there are folks all over the city who need services. And wherever we are, there are going to be some we're not going to reach as easily. I think we're going to, no matter where we are, even if we stayed put, we would have to add mobile services to our repertoire to really reach the folks that aren't able to get to services. And that's part of our long-range plan, no matter what.
This whole tagline, services, from someone that's been in this space, working in Chico 5 years, almost 6 years, working with poverty, there's not nearly enough services. There's not nearly. We could have three Jesus Centers and build 1,000 supportive housing units for the next 2 years, and we still wouldn't have enough services. What would you say around that?
No, I agree. I mean, this is not a one-stop solution. Yeah. There's no such thing. So so we'll be moving from, let's call what we have now an acre. I don't think it's quite an acre, but it might be close, to almost 4 acres. So in addition to just merely relocating everything we're currently doing, we'll be able to double our Sabbath House beds, which are women's shelter, from 23 to 50. We'll be able to add 10 to 15 family accommodations. Right now, the tourist shelter offers 8, and they're always at capacity.
Right.
So we'll double that and twice over. So we'll have a total of hopefully 20 to 23 family rooms. Then we want to add a whole other building that will be the one stop. So that'll be the first place someone comes when they're in crisis, when they're experiencing sort of the depths of their crisis. They can come there for food. They can come there to meet with a counselor. We'll have a wet shelter with 100 beds. So it doesn't matter how you show up, you can sleep. There'll even be some outdoor accommodations because some of our mental health issues actually folks don't want to actually be indoors. So there'll be some safe places for them to be outdoors. And it will have day services all day long. There'll be two parts of the campus as we're dealing with it now. One part will be for those who are in the sober housing, and a part for those who are not at that point in their journey, or who may not ever get to that point. And then the third part of the campus will be co-locate physical, mental, and physical, mental facilities. So we'll have medical services, some form of nursing on staff right there in location, pharmaceutical distribution.
Pharmaceutical distribution?
Yeah, medical distribution.
Give me five, because I'm like, I cannot tell you how big a problem.
No, they have to have med dispensary is huge.
Huge.
So if
we could do a show on that.
Well, we could, because I think one of the issues that the hospital and the PD is facing is the 5150 problem. This doesn't directly address that, but if we can have med dispensary on location, housing and accommodations that are safe and legal day and night, then folks can get stabilized, and that mitigates the escalation component.
Well, I know dozens of women that actually, mostly they were women that I actually ended up talking to that were literally tossed out of, I won't name names, out of shelters because their pill count didn't come up right. And I had some conversations going, why don't you dispense that? I mean, you're talking with about a mentally ill person who's on five or six psychotic drugs, but if you're expecting her to come up, or pill count to come up correct, to stay in this.
I know, like, but if you don't have a medical staff, you actually can't touch
that's
them.
That's a big win.
I know. So it's a huge thing.
It is. It's a huge thing. I commend you for that.
I have already met, I will not quote any of my colleagues because nothing's in paper yet, but I'll tell you the enthusiasm both from the behavioral health community and the medical community to co-locate.
Yeah.
So, because they're also trying to mitigate the impact and the ineffective treatment of these folks who are super vulnerable.
So, folks, just joining, we are speaking with Laura Kutsuna, the executive director at the Jesus Center here in Chico. And this is the Pledge Drive Show. We have callers. We have callers waiting. You are the callers. We have phone attendants waiting at 895-0131. So call on in and support this wonderful program and our people-powered radio staff here. You know, one question before I jump into some more of these prompts. They're using the term, I heard one of the terms, I think it was in the ER, of a navigation center. It made me think of San Francisco. Can you speak to any of that? You know, what navigation center is and how you kind of play into that?
Yeah, so this is a model that's being used all over the country. I'm, at this point, using it because it's fairly generic. It's the one stop. It's the first stop. Right now, if you were to enter into services, you might enter in through the door of the tourist shelter, through the Jesus Center. You might come in through PD, or you come in through the hospital. There's just a million entry points. What we're lacking here is a place where we're equipped to take you right at the front door and then help you quickly get to the kinds of services that you specifically need.
Housing.
Yeah, well,
they all need housing.
Yeah, sometimes that's not the leading, the number one at that moment. But it might be. But right now, if you're intoxicated with a dog, you're not going to find housing. And this would also have pet services, so we could accommodate that as well. I want to just jump back to the hidden from view piece, because this is the number one problem of this property, because it literally is landlocked. It has one little entrance off the Martin Luther King Parkway, and you have to know it's there to get there. And right now, it's open on certain days, certain times. You kind of feel like you're Harry Potter entering in to his special world. So the first thing that we did, I'm working with RGA Architects and Mike Trollander, and we looked at all the possible ways of entering that property. And so we immediately identified an entrance that's really literally it'll look and feel like Second Street downtown. So it's that wide, 64 feet wide, off of the Cal Water property. We've already asked them for an easement. They've agreed in theory to it. Runs right contiguous to the entrance to the tourist shelter's apartments behind there. It will be tree-lined, two-way traffic. People can come in on bikes, walk. It'll feel grand, really. If I had the visual medium, I could show you a fly-through that just shows how really, truly beautiful it could be. And that first building as you enter in would be this first stop. And again, there'll be outdoor space, there'll be place for animals, there's showers, free store, food, the whole nine yards.
But just to jump in on that, is I know a lot of people in the community, myself as well, are concerned about quote-unquote navigation centers or a place for these folks to be, in that unless we start building more housing, these people are literally stuck in this a perpetual situation where they can't find a permanent place to stay.
The system doesn't work if all of us aren't working at the various stages. And the permanent housing gurus in this community, trust me, they're working hard as well. We aren't. My role,
not to do that.
That's, we can't take that on too. We know that we have to shore up this first stage because there's huge gaps. We don't have a detox. We don't have med dispensary. We don't have pet facilities. We don't have wet beds. So we don't have day services. Those are the pieces that we're going to try to shore up. That does not let my colleagues who are the permanent housing folks off the hook. And they know that. We've had those conversations.
Yeah, not to make it a permanent housing conversation, I don't think we've got nearly enough going on the permanent housing. I remember I had when I first found out about, you know, some of the housing that was really starting to take off at the JC, when I first came here, there was just the Sabbath house.
And right, now there's we have 60 beds now. Yeah, we just opened another one this week.
You know, we physically interviewed around it, but mm-hmm. I had in my mind, I'm going, what if Laura Kutsuna and her team was so successful, they had 500 transitional housing that they could put everyone in? I'm like, I wouldn't want that, because now you just took a housing stock away from the market. Yeah. So we're
jammed.
Dying. This question right here is just one I just noticed today, and I actually had Bill Such on here a few years ago talking about hospitality. So I really want to understand why the Jesus Center changed their long-standing icon, their logo, from offering hospitality in the name of Jesus to their new little slogan of offering help and hope in the name of Jesus. Why the name change, and what's changed at the center? Because to me, if the mission's changed, something's changed at the Jesus Center.
Well, actually, that nomenclature was in place before I got there, that new verbiage. So I didn't make that change. Yeah.
Okay.
And hospitality, actually, it's funny you'd bring me
that
up.
I love that word.
It's a fantastic word.
I love that word.
And it means outreach to strangers. Yeah. And you'd be, you know, not to get into a sermon, but I could preach a sermon on
that.
Yeah,
Bill did. He did it on the show. He had this.
It's been my theme for the last few weeks with my staff and my board is, what does it look like to be the welcoming father? You may know the story of the prodigal son. I like to call it the story of the welcoming father. That is what we are, and that is what this facility needs. If it doesn't embody that, we've failed dramatically. It's still at the core of who we are, without a doubt.
Gosh, if I could lobby for that to be brought back, because I just know so many people in that situation or any
person.
Well,
if we don't embody it, it doesn't matter if it's in the name or not.
Yeah.
It is who Jesus is. Let's put it that way. So it's already in the name.
Yeah. I liked hospitality.
Yeah, I was actually a part of that process that wrote that tagline when I worked for Bill before. Mm-hmm. So it's a great one.
Let's shift a little bit. I've had this kind of written up. Many of the community fears were amplified by the, when I say community fears, you know, a lot of people with a lot of heart and a lot of care for the community are very concerned about, you know, like clothing stores closing, or, you know, people suddenly being told they can't go into the Jesus Center. And, you know, I know there's a lot of reasons for that, but that's what I'm calling community fears. But a lot of that was amplified by the Jesus Center's contracting with Robert Marbit, a nationally recognized homeless consultant known for dubious statements and a penchant for mini prison style facilities. How's your interaction with Robert Marbit been, and what's his role? What's going on?
He has no role. Okay. He was a consultant like many other consultants. They come and they give their feedback and advice, and we took what we wanted and we left the rest. Mm-hmm. He's not on permanent contract with us. I have no ongoing conversation with him. In fact, I haven't spoken to him since June when he mm-hmm. was in town. And there's no intention to bring him in. There are lots of great models across the country. And once we get the okay on November 7th to move forward and to build a contract with the city, we will be deploying particularly around that entry place, that you know, again, for lack of a better term, the navigation center. We will be looking across probably the state. We're not going to go much farther to look at examples of mm-hmm. how people are doing these things, what's working, what's not working. There's no one place that's got it figured out.
Maybe you do or don't need me for free consulting, but I think the Loaves and Fishes in Sacramento.
Mm-hmm. That's one of the ones that we'll
They are freaking amazing. And then my favorite person, as far as she works for the San Francisco Coalition on Homelessness, but her name is Kelly Cutler. And I met hundreds of people working with homeless on the streets.
Yeah.
And she's the most amazing. I call her the coolest Catholic. She's
well,
a Catholic.
Send me her contact.
I would. I know no, she'd I love to that. Talk to you, because she is heavily engaged with the
We're
navigation
We're not going
to
reinvent
center.
The wheel here.
Well, I think there's not no even point. So much reinventing the wheel. I guess where I'm trying to go, and as an advocate and someone covering this from a journalist perspective, I don't think we listen to the homeless folks enough.
No,
I don't think
absolutely.
We can possibly.
No, they are number one on the list of people to consult.
And, she literally, that's her take. Yeah. So she's got a lot of insights into the navigation centers.
Yeah, Sianna Sinoki is working with me on that piece, and Lisa mm-hmm. Currier as well. Mm-hmm. This is not going to be a Jesus Center effort, mm-hmm. and this is going to be a community-wide effort. Mm-hmm. This expansion piece particularly, we've not done this well before. So we as a community need to learn from one another, from the folks that we're trying to actually help move forward in their lives, and other communities that have both succeeded and failed.
What happens to the property you have now once you move into
this? I've got some ideas, but it will probably likely be leveraged to get the most money out of as we can so we can build this thing. So realistically, that's our plan.
I don't think we mentioned time frames. I mean, what are you?
We don't have a time frame. Once the city gets the okay and they have a location for the BMX community facility, they'll get a 12-month notice.
Yeah.
We'll go into a massive capital campaign mode. We're working with a couple of prospects for firms to help us raise. It'll be somewhere in the range, depending on a couple of major factors. We'll be raising somewhere around $15 million.
I think we got just enough time to cover this. I've known Bill Such as long as I've been in Chico, mm-hmm. and I remember him being followed out of the Greater Chico Homeless Task Force by Ashley Gibb mm-hmm. when he said, the worst of the worst go to the Jesus Center. And I mm-hmm. actually had him on the show a few years after mm-hmm. that discussing that. Mm-hmm. But the dynamics are very dire in that you've got varying scales of need at the Jesus Center. You've got people that are just like, wow, this per person, or you've so got complex. Someone that's on a fixed income. As a community member, I'm just a little concerned about the process of, sorry, you've been 86th and people coming back in. You know, what do these folks do? Or what?
If you ask me how many people are on our list today, actually there are none. There are none on the 86th list. When it got hot this summer, we let everybody in and we gave everyone, you know, a reboot. That's a moving target. We don't have a perfect science for that. And part of the issue is we feed everybody. We give everyone the same answer to whatever question they're asking. You're here, you need food. What we need to be doing is build a relational component so everyone gets what they're actually needing to get through the barriers they have to ending their misery or their homelessness or mitigating their poverty. Mm-hmm. To do that well, we're not there yet, Bill. We're just not. And we're working on it. And I agree with you. I mean, first of all, I wouldn't call them the worst of the worst. I would call them they're just hurting. I mean, and and the reasons they're hurting become more and more clearly, not many of which are their own doing. And so there is no one quick fix. And it's not a pair of shoes, it's not a house, it's not a meal, it's complex. And, you know, we were just working with a couple people, actually us and the tourist shelter, over the last week. And at the end of the day, the daughter of them and the mom, the daughter sabotaged them getting help because the daughter refused to play by any, I mean, everyone was breaking rules for them and she just wouldn't play. Mm-hmm. And so at the end of the day, we had this 85-year-old woman walking out homeless. And you're just like, girl, you're crazy. So there's so many factors, and I would be naive to say that any of this will fix all of them, but I'm hoping we'll have more tools so we can do more individualized approaches.
Let's stop on that real quick. So now, it used to be when I first got here, you mean you could get a meal at the Jesus Center. I think it's changed now, maybe not the first meal, but if you're going to get meals at the Jesus Center, you have to sign up.
Not mandatory. Get everybody to do a sign in because then we can understand who they are. They're, you know, it's an 8-minute intake. It's very simple. They get a picture ID, which they can actually use out in the community for check cashing and other services. So they're psyched about that. They're coming to us and wanting those. The other thing that we did at the Jesus Center is we never explained to them, hey, this is how we operate. This is what we're here for. Right. So we actually sit down and say, here are the services you can expect from us. And this is what you can expect in terms of how you get treated. And that is my set of rules for my staff. You have to follow the rules that we just told them you get to follow. Mm-hmm. So it's an accountability both ways.
You have nobody that's when I say 86.
My staff told me last week we have nobody on the out list.
Nice. I mean,
well, it's nice, except for the fact that I've still got neighbors screaming because there's people, you know, on their lawns. And anyway, it's complex.
You know, one thing
we do our best to serve. We want to serve everybody. That is our goal.
I think I can add a little bit to the conversation because I've never been a hypothetical. I'm one that just jumps in and says, OK, I experienced it. And it's a very stressful, chaotic, hurting. It's just eating meals. This has been a few years. I haven't been there in a few years. But the point I wanted to make is I had dozens of meals and I've worked with dozens of folks at the Jesus Center. Yeah. And it's a very, very chaotic environment when you've got someone in there that's just maybe they're I don't even want to try to pretend on some of the things I've seen there.
No,
it becomes very difficult for the center to kind of go, look, you know, and I think that's what Bill kind of meant. It's like you've got these people that are just for whatever reason that they're hurt and they're exhibiting this behavior, but you do have to figure out something.
Well, and that's one of the nice things about a new facility is we will be able to have part of the dining room that's maybe a quieter spot. So people who don't want all that chaos, they can go in a quieter place.
Yeah, it's a small dining room.
You know, we'll have more of that flexibility. Same with the way the bedrooms, if you will, are set up. There'll be some different configurations. I'll tell you, just when I left here, I was a little down when I came in here because we have video now on all our facility. And one of the reasons we look at it is because people, like we were just looking at some tape today, because we had heard from a woman that she had been accosted at night in front of our building. And my staff came in after reviewing hours and hours of tape, and she said, basically, you have no idea what's going on at night in front of this building. It's horrific. I mean, she could barely tell me the stories that she saw on tape on our building. And I'll tell you, if there's not any one thing that wants me to get out of that neighborhood, it's that. In this new facility, we will be enclosed. And that, I get it, how people think that's hidden. That means safe. That means women who don't want to sleep inside and want to sleep outside could, and not be victims during the night.
It's insane. I mean, I did this on my show, Laura, like last week. I said, when's the last time you saw someone arrested for raping a homeless person? You don't. No. And it happens all the time.
It happens all the time. They are victimized all the time. I relish the time that we could actually be a little bit hidden, if you will. Not so that they're hiding or we can't see them, but they don't get to be victims any longer. It just kills me.
I've always had a hard time coming up with even a nonprofit model where literally your number one customer is the person that donates to you. And how does that affect, you know what I'm getting at? Because it's like the homeless person's not paying for the services.
Right.
And I just have a lot of concern and a lot of stories I've heard over the course of time that, you know, maybe they haven't been as well served as possible. Yeah. I'm talking generically.
Money doesn't come without strings attached. Every kind of money does. Mm-hmm. Government money. The reason we don't take government money isn't because of anything except for the strings. But I'll tell you, absolutely. So does donor money. And so you have to be very clear up front what you're willing to, when you sign at the dotted line for federal money or state money, you're signing away so much of your freedoms for how that money gets spent. The beauty of my money, 95% of it comes with no strings, and I get to spend it the way that we as a team feel and we as a community think is right. That means we're super agile. That's why I don't want to build this facility with government money. I want to build it with flexible money. However, if anyone's going to tell me, in order to build this, you have to do X, Y, or Z, and I don't agree with that, I'm not taking that money. I am one of the weirder executive directors. I turn away money all the time. Not because of the strings, but because they want me to do something I'm not prepared to do yet. I mean, I could tell you story after story, but I will not be. We are in charge of the mission. The donors are not.
Loaves and Fishes doesn't take any private. They're all private donors as well. And I actually had a fun interaction with Sister Libby Fernandez, used to be the executive director. I said, I've been telling people this, that if someone came to Loaves and Fishes with a $50,000 check, but they wanted you to do something against your mission, you'd tell them to go elsewhere.
I would.
And someone started laughing. It was the secretary in the office. That's her mom that started it. Her name's Chris Delaney. And she said, well, that's not exactly how I would have worded it, but that's true.
Yeah.
You know, and
no, and I have done it many times.
Yeah.
And again, not because they don't want to do something, you know, wrong. It's just that I'm not either set up to be successful or I don't want that program. We have a family who gave us a house for pregnant women and children. And we got very, very down into the details of what they wanted me to do with the house that they gave me. And it was written into an MOU.
Yeah.
So that if I stop using the house that now is ours for that purpose, it will go to a like organization. And I agreed to those terms because we were aligned. But they had that right. And I had the right to say, yes, I'll do this. But when it comes to how we program this and who we place, that's what we get to decide.
Yeah.
So they don't meddle in that. Mm-hmm. And it's been so far so good. It's been a really, really great.
Closing comments?
No, we're very excited. We're going to council. Mark Orme and I are going to be presenting on the 7th. You know, Mark's goal will be to convince the council that this is a good idea. So we have a conservative council. So Mark will be framing it in words that they'll understand. And that's great. And I'll be sharing the visuals of the new possibilities. I've got drafts and I've got a cool fly through that everyone will get to see. And
you're going to do it the homeless task force too? A lot of times it's the same day.
You know, I have not been asked, okay. But we'll find out.
I'll definitely be around on the 7th. Thanks so much for coming in, Laura Kutsuna.
Appreciate it.